Live.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
MDLive.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
MDLive.radio.
Kev, we'll get you back in. We've got sure. David Linden in the studio. David, your mic's on. You're ready to go. Welcome aboard, first of all. Welcome to Indie Live Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great.
It's great. It's and you know that it's different seeing you in your natural attire. I used to see you in a suit. Actually, I look out for Alison Thewlis, and she's always got a yellow.
She's always in yellow, yeah.
She is. She's easy to spot. You're knackered. You got back a good time last night.
I'm a bit gubbed, but I mean, for me, it's a bit of a kind of grind being down in Westminster, but you know, being home and doing my surgeries and stuff like that is the most important thing. So perversely for me, some people would see their kind of week starting on a Monday. My kind of week starts on a Friday. The beginning of the day for me is, you know, you go and you do your surgeries and stuff like that. So I've just been out to Bayliss and Library, speaking to, I think, 8 or 9 different.
And you're quite prolific. You've got you put out on Facebook, Twitter, your events of the weekend, what you've been doing. I know it's, in fact, it's for the week, what you've been doing, all the sessions and blah, blah, blah. You look like a very busy guy.
I don't think I'm any busier than any of my colleagues. To be kind of blunt about it, you know, in 2017, the SNP did not have a great election. There was a lot of colleagues who lost their seats. And I've got a theory that some of them that lost their seats, you know, they worked really, really incredibly hard, but perhaps just didn't communicate that that well to their constituents. And so maybe people didn't quite understand the likes of the work that they were doing. When I got elected, I was very, very keen to make sure that, you know, if I'm going to do all this work, then people would know about it and they would know that they've got a hard-working SNP MP.
Well, I think they know that anyway. I think there's been really good work you're doing on the premature baby bill that you put into. How's that going, by the way?
Obviously Parliament proroguing means that we've kind of started a new legislative session. The government had given an undertaking to me that they would go and do a kind of review into the situation, so that consultation process closed just last Friday night. So the government are really considering the outcome of that. We feel that we've done as much as we can to try and get other parents of premature babies to kind of really feed into that. The charities have been working with, like Bliss and the Smallest Things, they've been really good at kind of mobilising parents. So I kind of feel that, you know, we've made the case now, and it's really up for the British government to kind of move on that.
I think you have, but it's like an oil tanker, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting you talk there about Brexit halting things, proroguing Parliament, and whenever independence is mentioned, Nicola Sturgeon's told to get on with the day job, which he is. I've never heard that once said to Boris Johnson.
No, and so this is the thing, you know, we spend all of our time, and there's an immense amount of hypocrisy at Westminster, and I think your listeners are aware of that, but it is frustrating because, you know, they are so focused on this constitutional issue, and they're not getting on with the day job, which is making sure that they're supporting families of premature and sick babies. And when you contrast that, you know, the Scottish Government, which has taken the referendum bill through Holyrood, making the case for independence, but also getting on with the day job as well. So I think any allegations of people not getting on with the day job, it's definitely Westminster.
Indeed. Now, David, I've got to ask you, you stood up in the Parliament, you asked a question, I can't remember what the question was, but the guy up on the back benches says, could you repeat the question? You're laughing, but I'll tell you, there was lots of us throwing our shoes and stuff at the telly, couldn't you believe it? We thought he was mocking you. I don't know, how did you feel at that point when he was asking to repeat the question first?
Yeah, I mean, so this happens in a kind of semi-regular basis.
You're kidding!
It's quite topical you should actually mention this, because last night, I'll come back to that incident, which was Paul Beresford, who's the Tory MP.
Paul Beresford.
Last night, Alan Brown, my colleague from Kilmarnock and Loudoun, get an email.
He's another one with a thick accent.
So he has, and you know, Alan's one of the most probably educated members in their group, really, really articulate guy, but happens to speak in Ayrshire Scots. So Alan and I get this email last night, I'll just read it out. It came out at 4:20 yesterday afternoon. Mr. Linden, didn't understand a word of it. Well, almost everything. Mr. Brown, for goodness sake, get a grip of your tongue. Mr. Blackford, so Ian was copied into this as well. As leader, you should get your MPs elocution lessons so we can understand what they say without turning the volume up to max and often had to rewind and listen again. You never know, if I can understand what you're all saying, I might agree with some of it. So, I mean, this is kind of fairly par for the course. We get these emails and people kind of having a pop at us at what we're saying. And so there's a frustration to that, because Yeah, absolutely. We come from parts of Scotland where we've got distinctive accents. But there's, again, this Westminster hypocrisy there is that in 2014, people were told, you know, stay part of the United Kingdom, lead the United Kingdom.
Aye.
And so, you know, much to my disappointment, people voted no in 2014. Mm-hmm. We're there and we're just shown absolute disrespect. And you know, none of us are going to change our accents or the way we speak to go down there. That's just not going to happen.
But you know, this the Parliament Live channel on the BBC has never been watched so much, I don't think. People getting in touch with us here. Did you see this, Norrie? Did you see that, Norrie? And they go, I missed that. I need to go back and see. Yeah. People know what's going on. Also, they see when Ian Blackford's on the speak, when he's on his feet, and I want to get in touch on this a bit, he gets heckled quite a lot. And there's been things that have been picked up by the microphones. I don't know if the microphones are close to you or how far away they are, or they get switched on, or who switches them on when you speak. I don't know how that all works. Yeah. But you hear voices like I Get Back to Sky. Mm-hmm. Jackson Carwash has been on the Twitter feed this morning talking about the silent crofter talking in tongues or whatever. You know, he gets a hard time, and he's got to... When he speaks, actually, they walk out on him.
Yeah.
And Joanna Cherry did that. They walked out.
Yeah.
How does he cope with all that? Is he a strong guy underneath it all?
He is. You know, look, Ian's my group leader, but Ian's also somebody that I count as a kind of personal friend. Mm-hmm. And the resilience that he's got to kind of just go on with this kind of orchestrated barracking and disrespect. I mean, one of the things that we see on a fairly regular basis is Ian's obviously guaranteed two questions at PMQs. So you know when Ian's going to be up next, because we basically have a slew of these Corbyn questions which are all over the shop, a Tory backbench, and then go straight to Ian. And there's an orchestrated attempt to kind of groan when the speaker shouts Ian's name. And Ian, I think, has learned how to handle it, although arguably, you know, you shouldn't have to kind of deal with that kind of stuff.
No, you shouldn't.
But I kind of see it as being... a manifestation of their behaviour, where they understand that we're a real threat. And so in some respects, I think the fact that they're doing this shows how frustrated they are. That, you know, if Corbyn will stand up and he'll ask us six questions, and they tend to be in all manner of different topics all over the place. But with Ian's two questions, he really manages to get to the kind of nub of the issue. And it's like the likes of Joanna as well, where, you know, really quite sharp, incise questions. And so I think that the way that they behave is really a manifestation of them trying to kind of drown that out.
And as you say, it's orchestrated. It's deliberate, and they know what they're doing. And a lot of it, and even when they get to their feet for an intervention, it makes absolutely no sense what they've just said. What is that? Just time wasting? What is that? Is it to put you off your stride?
Yeah. So I mean, the whole idea that the whole kind of style of Westminster politics is very much a case of intervene early, throw somebody off their speech so that they kind of go and babble and things like that. Ian's an experienced kind of politician, and he knows how to handle them. But there's no doubt, and I think they sometimes try this with me. I'm obviously the most junior SNP MP. I only got elected in 2017. So I think they kind of try to kind of throw you off a wee bit. But for me, it's just about remembering why we're there. I'm not there to impress Tories with grandiose speeches and pronouncing my P's and Q's. My job is to go there, make the case for independence, stop Brexit, and make sure we give Scotland the right to choose its own future.
Here's the thing, David. I was speaking to... I was on my travels. I took a journalist diary with me in England from north west to south east, a long way, getting views on Brexit and Scotland. It's not very good. I think England's a broken country. And they see... The Brexiteers see Scotland as a real threat to their Brexit plans. And every time Ian Blackford gets up to speak, the hackles get raised down there.
Yeah.
And you've got Laura Koonsberg and others complicit in this, who... state a narrative that the Scottish MPs are there to well, they're not the biggest Remain group. That's the Lib Dems, of course, although they've got less numbers. And they put the Scottish team down, and Boris Johnson, and I even saw Rees-Mogg absolutely destroy, not destroy, but put I think Kirsty Blackman on a specific question about assessments,
economic assessments.
He says, ask any economist, you'll get the answer you want, and sat down.
What's
that all about? Come on!
I think the Westminster politicians are kind of really struggling now to work out how to deal with Scotland. There's no doubt that they are finding it a bit kind of frustrating. I don't think that the court decisions has probably helped as well.
Indeed.
I think that they just see this incredibly frustrating part of the UK that is, in many respects, kind of threatening their kind of plans. And you know, years ago, certainly before the landslide in 2015, Scotland could be kind of relied to just send, you know, 40-odd Labour MPs who would go down and kind of keep their heads down. Mm-hmm. Whereas for us, you know, we genuinely believe that for so long as we've got to be there, and I really hope that it's not that much longer, that, you know, we've got to go there and do a job and speak up for Scotland. And they've just even, what? 4 years on, they're still struggling to, you know, adapt to that.
They are indeed. David, a question I asked... I asked Colin Fox this, what we would do if he got when he lost his seat as an MP. He says, I went back to my day job. He's an accountant. When Scotland gets its independence, you'll no longer be needed.
Absolutely.
So you're actually voting to lose your job,
yeah,
and you're quite prepared to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so like, I think
people forget that, don't they?
Yeah. I've been a campaign for the SNP since I was 11 years old. My first election was in 2001. And you know, I never as an 11-year-old thought about a career as a politician. No. I was a young nationalist.
Like, I didn't think I'd be doing this.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for me, I kind of see this as something that, you know, we just need to do until we get independence, and then I'm quite happy to go and do something else. And it's ironic. I mean, it's a real kind of walk down memory lane just coming here. So my kind of first kind of proper job after leaving school, I worked in Glasgow Credit Union, which is 95 Morrison Street, and obviously
we're
here at 53 Morrison Street. So I would be more than happy to go back and do something like that. I did not get into politics to be a Westminster MP. This is a temporary thing. We're in there to do a job, and you know, the 35 of us are absolutely focused in getting that job done and getting out there and going back to having a normal life after that.
Brilliant. Listen, what you put in your iPad? Your iPod? What are you listening to? What tunes are you listening to?
I'm listening to an Editors album at the moment. I've got a mate of mine who he and I kind of grew up together and kind of into kind of Franz Ferdinand and things like that. So we went along to see a Franz Ferdinand gig years and years ago. And Editors were the support group that night. It was just along the road at the Grand Ole Opry. And I was overseeing him last Saturday. And he's, oh, you need to kind of listen to these songs.
I'm scrolling down our music list to see if I can get any, but yep. I don't think we have, actually. Yep. I think we've got Franz Ferdinand.
Absolutely.
Try and get some of that for you.
Yep.
Just getting back to Westminster, it's a long way to travel, isn't it? Where does your week start? Do you start on Monday, a flight or a sleeper?
I've got a young family, as you've kind of alluded to earlier. I'm not somebody who naturally loves London, so I try and spend as little time as possible there. So I try to go down as late as I can on a Monday, obviously. I'm a diligent parliamentarian and kind of do my job there, but I'm not there to hang around and kind of settle down in London, so I'll generally head down the kind of Monday afternoon in the latest possible flight or the latest possible train. And then if I can get out there on a Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night, absolutely back home. I found, in many respects still do, the whole kind of Westminster atmosphere quite difficult. So I remember the first time that I took part in a debate and just being absolutely terrified, and it wasn't, you know, being terrified because I was somehow scared of Tories or anything like that, but to put it in a context, when I left school at 16, I never went to university. I was never in a university debating society.
All right.
So the first time that I really took part in a formal debate was as a new MP.
Wow.
So I don't find, it's just not a natural environment for me.
But it'll become natural.
Well, it certainly won't be there long enough for it to become natural. But it's not somewhere that I can kind of associate with, so I get down as quickly as I can. Get it done and back out again.
Right, guess what? I found Franz Ferdinand for you.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you've heard this track. It's called Eleanor, Put Your Boots On. Mm-hmm. You know this, right?
It's very good.
Right, it only lasts for 2 minutes 40. We'll play this, then we'll come back, David Linden, with me, guest, and you're here for another, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Fantastic. You're listening to me, Norrie Hunter, live on Indie Live Radio. It's 12, just come up to 12:20. This is Franz Ferdinand. There we go, that was Franz Ferdinand, with a curiously named Eleanor, Put Your Boots On. Quite enjoyed that, David. It's not bad, actually.
It was fantastic.
Not my kind of music, but that's what we're here for.
Yep.
Right, big news, I suppose, is in the papers. Ruth Davidson, this is about politics in general and the ethics of politics, David. She's shocked Scottish politics by joining PR firm Topcom Communications as a senior advisor. What do you make of this?
Ruth Davidson's a constituency MSP, and I'm a constituency MP, and I'm just so conscious of the fact that this is a full-time job. The people that we represent, whether it's in the Scottish Parliament or at Westminster, still need our help. And the idea that Ruth Davidson can just kind of beaver off and go and do something else on a kind of part-time basis really does make an absolute mockery of the Scottish Parliament. I think that's the thing that really annoys me.
Yep.
Is that, you know, the Scottish Parliament was set up to deal with the day-to-day lives that issues that people have, and the idea that she is just going to kind of, you know, turn her phone off and go away and do some bidding for somebody else whilst trying to simultaneously be an MSP is hugely disrespectful to the Scottish Parliament.
It is.
And our voters.
Neil Findlay is trying to bring a bill through to ban this kind of practice in the Scottish Parliament. I'm not sure how he's getting on with it, but that's one that should be supported, isn't it?
Yeah, I just... The job of being a politician is something that is a huge privilege, and people are putting their trust in you. In my case, I represent, you know, 70-odd thousand voters, and it wouldn't cross my mind, the idea to think that, oh, I'll just, you know, go away and do something else while simultaneously doing
the
job. No, exactly. I mean, one of the most precious commodity that I've got at the moment is time and the ability to just get a couple of hours sleep. And the idea that Ruth Davidson thinks that she can go and do something else while serving in her Scottish Parliament, as I say, it's really disrespectful to the Parliament. Yeah. But I think it does send a wee bit of a signal that maybe she's thinking possibly that her side of the argument has failed, yeah, and that she's a way to go and kind of chase, ooh, the money now. I genuinely believe that the momentum is there with us.
That's
and
a good
I think
point
she's kind of thinking she's going to get out and this is her.
I think there's high quality candidates going to be standing against her. I think Angus Robertson was going to be chasing her seat in Edinburgh. I don't know.
Edinburgh Central, yeah.
Edinburgh Central. Yeah. She's a bit scared of that, I would imagine. Rumour is she doesn't do many surgeries.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, you know, if you take on this kind of work, should she quit the job? Should she say, right, that's it, I'm going to get a job like Kezia Dugdale did, although she went in the jungle, took another job.
Yeah.
But after that, she says, I'm out, I've got a job with the...
yeah, I mean, if Ruth Davidson wants to put her money where her mouth is, if Ruth Davidson, you know, is serious about going away and doing this lobbying job, she needs to dedicate her time to doing that. And if she can't be a full-time MSP for Edinburgh Central, then she ought to do the honourable thing and resign her seat and cause a by-election. And I think the SNP would probably win the seat.
What would happen if an SNP member took on another job?
I just don't think that culture's there. We have not gone into politics, whether it's MPs or MSPs. We've not gone into this to try and chase lots of money. We've got into it because we genuinely think that the best thing for Scotland is to kind of pursue Scottish interests. And the two things that you sign up to when you become an SNP member in our constitution, mm-hmm, is the furtherance of all Scottish interests and independence for Scotland. And that, to me, strikes me as being more than enough in somebody's plate to be going and doing. So I just don't think there's a culture of that. Where people should be going and kind of
fair
supplement
enough
their salaries.
The other bits of news that came through, must chat about, is the Lib Dems failing to vote to protect the NHS. They've been accused of yellow Tories.
Yep.
They won't support Corbyn. You can maybe tell us why. I don't know. What's the mood music down there with the parties? It seems that everyone's in flux.
Yeah.
Nobody can trust anyone.
Well, I mean, I've always long believed that you can't and shouldn't really be able to try and trust Liberal Democrats. I mean, these are people that propped up the Tories in government from 2010 to 2015.
Aye, let's not forget.
And your listeners should not forget that. And just in many respects, Jo Swinson, you know, I think she has been conditioned into the mindset of a UK government minister, and how she managed to kind of order her and her 19 MPs to sit on their hands on a motion about kind of privatisation of health and things like that. It really is. It beggars belief, but unfortunately doesn't come as a surprise because we know that the Lib Dems, you know, just can't be trusted after the Diamond Coalition.
And just a wee point on Jo Swinson. If the members down south can't understand what you're saying, how on earth do they understand what she's saying after she's swallowed those marbles and then she begins to speak? Where does that accent come from? Why is she trying?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure about the accent, but it's what she actually says. I don't think it necessarily represents the kind of views of Scottish electors or even people in Eastern Bartonshire. This, mm-hmm, does feel to me like somebody who's kind of decided that they're going to Westminster and wants to play the kind of London-Westminster game. And
aye,
all I can say is that SNP MPs aren't going to do that. But
no,
the vote that she cast or failed to cast earlier this week,
I think
it's just a complete dereliction of duty, and it just makes all the more of a case why we need to elect the SNP candidate in Eastern Bartonshire, really, Amy Callaghan, who will come down there for the short term that we're there to just get the job done and stand up for our constituents in a way that Jo Swinson isn't.
Indeed. John Nicholson isn't going to stand in that seat. It was a big shock to the constituents there. They thought he would. He's moved to Perth and Ochil. Why do you think John didn't take that on? Is he, do you think Joe Swinson's got a good chance?
I don't know. I'm not kind of privy to the inner workings of Eastern Bartonshire politics. I know that John's committed to standing in Auckland South Perthshire. Mm-hmm. In many respects, the big challenge for us at this election is really trying to win back some of those Tory seats that we lost to them in 2017. Mm-hmm. John Nicholson's an incredibly talented politician who I think will really give Luke Graham a run for his money.
Yeah, because that's only a few hundred votes, isn't it?
It's a relatively small majority. Yeah. And you know, I'm the last person that can comment on small majorities given the size of mine, but I think that the momentum is very much with the SNP for this election, and we need, you know, a high quality candidate to kind of stand in these Tory seats, and I've got no doubt that John Nicholson will be that.
Well, the polls are looking good for the SNP. It looks 40 odd percent in the polls, more than that. That's enough to take just about every seat bar two or three, like it was in the last election but one. So it's could be a shoo-in for the SNP guys.
Well, I've never looked at polls and thought that for definite that is what's going to happen. I've, despite being only 29, I'm very kind of traditional as a politician, that I just kind of get my head down, knock as many doors as possible, speak to as many voters, and, you know, later
good
on this
man.
Afternoon about
that's
leafling.
What we love.
I'm not interested in kind of looking at these polls and kind of putting a lot of stock into it. You know, if we come back with over 50 seats, great.
Do you know, one eye looking at them and one eye closed and...
Sometimes, I mean, when I went into the 2017 election campaign, if I'd looked at the polls, I would have been fairly confident I was coming back with a massive majority. And, you know, a lot happened in that campaign. Mm. And, you know, again, with the kind of skin of my teeth. So I tend not to focus on polls and focus more on how many
politicians
doors are
shut. Can't be drawn onto polls at all.
Absolutely.
The big one that counts is the election.
Yep.
In yesterday's National Wrestling, Leslie Riddick stated that a strong election for the SNP will not improve Scotland's standing in the Union. This is after Boris Johnson has said that Scotland has no role in the withdrawal bill, even though the Sewell Commission says otherwise. Now, the problem for Boris Johnson is that when the Scottish Parliament and the Scotland Act were written back in the day, they never thought the SNP would get in.
No.
They'd put the voting system, the de Haunt system, so they couldn't get an advantage.
No, this was all meant to kill nationalism stone.
Aye.
And I'm afraid that stone has now fallen way to the bottom of the ocean.
How ironic would it be if Scotland usurped the Brexit plans of the British establishment?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we can, that's great. But, you know, I've been there since 2017, and there's just nothing that I've seen. I thought that... I could not have believed more in independence than I did when I became an MP. But these last 2.5 years there have just absolutely reaffirmed to me why we need to be, you know, free from this nonsense as quickly as possible. This kind of stuff where, you know, the Prime Minister is kind of standing up and basically suggesting that, oh, well, you know, the Scottish Parliament has no role in this, it just highlights the complete disrespect agenda that they've got for Scotland.
But why have they got this disrespect? They said we would lead... don't leave, lead.
Well, I think they said that in the heat of an election campaign where they thought that those kind of sound bites worked for folk. But the proof's been in the pudding that since the whole Brexit process kicked off, Scotland has been absolutely marginalised. You know, we've got, you know, England voted for Brexit, it's getting Brexit. Wales voted for Brexit, it's getting Brexit.
Aye.
Northern Ireland voted to remain, it's getting special status. Scotland voted to remain, it's getting absolute hee-haw.
I know.
And I think that this just reaffirms once again that there's a complete disrespect agenda there.
And don't think we're not watching this
and
taking this all in. After 2014, I think you'll probably agree, I think the Scottish public have got a real, real appetite for politics because it was such a positive vibe we got, and we're taking people in right, left and centre. I think you alluded to it earlier. More people are coming on board to the SNP. I don't think anyone's gone from... yes to no. I don't think that happens.
I mean, I think I kind of judge everything based on, and I don't want to be kind of parochial about it, but my constituency is something that comes first for me, and I ran the referendum campaign locally in Glasgow East in 2014, and so I know, I mean, there's not a street in my constituency that I've not been in canvassing and door knocking. I can tell you, even just by looking at a map, this is the place where the dogs are and, you know, the fences you can't get in. But the interesting thing, Norrie, is that there are streets that I was in 2014 where I spoke to residents who were incredibly hostile about the prospect of independence, and they come from a demographic that would not be fertile territory for us. And over the last few months, you know, I've been in these streets, and people who would ordinarily have chased me and the SNP and the Yes campaign now want to have a conversation. And that's not saying that they're 100% there and they've got the car sticker or anything yet.
No.
But there are people who are absolutely on a journey, and I think it's just been because of the kind of the behaviour that's been kind of coming out of Westminster since.
I think you've hit on a good point there. I don't know if you saw the big debate on Wednesday. It's the BBC Scotland's Question Time, but Scotland.
I didn't know.
And with Robert Val, help me out. Sonnen. He worked for Common Space. Now he works for Scotia Media. Okay. He was on the panel, and he says, as a person from the Windrush background, he says you would not believe the confidence and the assurance and the relief when the First Minister of that country says you're all welcome, immigrants. Language is important, he said. I tend to agree with him. It's how you speak to people on the streets, at the doors. Yeah. I've got this, I only put this on my, I've got a badge.
Yep.
It's only because Kev's got the same thing, he picks up my phone. So I put that on it. On the train, looking at my phone, people say, I like your badge, mate.
Yeah.
And it's that never happened.
And that's the thing for us, is about remembering that everything's a conversation. And the point that I try and make, and I would definitely appeal to the people that are listening to this, is that if you're a supporter of independence, get involved in that whole process. Get out there and speak to folk who aren't quite convinced yet. It's great, if we're talking to ourselves and keeping ourselves going. But in order for us to go over the line next time, we need to be going and having conversations with people who didn't come with us in 2014. So I genuinely see my role as an SNP MP to just be an ambassador for the cause of independence and get out and speak to as many folk in my constituency. And, sometimes I'd love to spend all of my time in the same polling districts where, yes, absolutely kind of romped home. But actually, the thing that I enjoy most is just speaking to folk who, weren't with us in 2014. And I really enjoy that challenge. And I believe, heart, soul and mind, that we're definitely getting people to move now.
I'll tell you a story, David. In my church, they're all small conservatives, or they were. Over the last, 6 months, they've come up to me and asked me for my views, because I do this, and they know I do this. Yep. And they ask me my opinions and things. I tell them I'm quite open and frank.
Yep.
And it's like the 12 Angry Men. Have you seen the film?
Yep.
One by one, they're coming over. You were right, son.
Yeah, and I think there's...
But I didn't force it on them.
There's a degree of patience that's required when you're having these conversations. I think that if we expect over the course of a five-minute conversation somebody going from kind of, not liking the SNP or the Yes campaign or the prospects of independence to then being kind of absolutely kind of up for the cup, we need to just understand that we've got to go back and have conversations with people. And it might take a bit of effort. But I think that the current circumstances are definitely helping people move in that direction. Because it's a tale of two unions. I gave a speech in Parliament yesterday, the Queen's speech, but it's a tale of two unions. You've got the European Union, which has looked after this small independent country, the Republic of Ireland. It's been really sensitive to its needs, all that kind of thing. And you've got this British Union that's looking at Scotland, just shutting it out, ignoring it and not taking it seriously. And I think when you kind of put it in that context, people can really, really resonate with that. And the most important people that resonate with that are undecided voters, who I think are coming to us in big number now.
I think the final question I've got to ask is, when do you think the next general election will be?
I think it's unavoidable. I think it'll be here sooner rather than later.
Before Christmas?
I think so. We will need to wait and see what the vote goes on Monday. The most important thing for us in the SNP is making sure that extension's in place, so we don't crash out. But I think a general election is inevitable now. We've got a government that's got a majority of minus 40. So I think that the Parliament's going to collapse, and the opportunity for us to go into that campaign and just make the case that we need to stop Brexit and give Scotland the right to choose its own future will be insatiable, and people in Scotland are going to take that.
On that note, David Lennon, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us. Big hand for David.
Fantastic.
And we'll hope to get you back in at some point, hopefully before the election.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
And thanks again for coming in. Live.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.
Live.radio.
The people of Scotland, we are superheroes.